Hello, and welcome back to the Wizard Staff. I'm your host, Guy.
And I'm Blake.
And we are two drunk novices who like to talk about EDH. We drink and swear, so you've been warned. Please drink responsibly when you're talking about children's card games. It's been a hot minute, Blake. hope you've been doing well, and I know that you have been, because we talk all the time. But to our listeners, we're coming off the cusp of Commander 2021 and Strixhaven. That was a lot. And so we took a little break, but we're back and we're doing an episode before we get into Modern Horizons 2, which is right around the corner for us.
Yeah, by the time this episode comes out, there'll probably be even more spoilers. I think spoilers started a couple of days ago for Modern Horizons. So I'm looking forward to that.
Full spoiler season starts for us technically tomorrow, but we've seen a handful of cards so far, and I'm looking forward to all the crazy shenanigans that will probably come out of this new set, because we got quite a bunch in the first one, you know?
Yeah, the original was, ooh boy, that was spicy. Very spicy.
Oh yeah. We didn't do a set review because we were like, oh, it's not going to be that impactful to Commander, and like, we were wrong. We were very wrong. Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about today. Today we are going to just ask the question, are the Commander precons getting better or worse? And this is kind of coming off of, you know, talking about Commander 2021 recently. We got five decks there, and we're just going to kind of go through the past few years, do kind of a analytical price point of reprint value and affordability, the different power levels that we've seen, the popularity of the cards, and do we think that these products are, you know, doing what they have been created to do, which is get players into Commander. But before we do that, Blake, what are you drinking tonight?
Well, last episode I was drinking a canned wine, and it was carbonated, and I liked it so much that I decided to go with another one. I have one that's called The Bubbles Oregon Grown Underwood. It's made in Oregon, and it's a carbonated wine, and I'm already feeling it. It's like, every time I hold this, I think like, oh, it's just a beer, and I've taken like four sips, and I'm like, oh, I already feel this. This is weird.
Interesting. Yeah. I'm just drinking my coffee and Bailey's today. Still a little tired. And it's like 2 in the afternoon. So, you know, and we got a lot to go over. So I need a little pick-me-up, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Still great. I love Bailey's and just mixing it with my favorite brand of coffee, which actually is coffee from a local bagel shop that I buy from every day. So if you're in the LA area, go buy from Sam's Bagels.
Not sponsored
at all. I give them way too much money for them to even want to consider probably sponsoring us. If they started giving me money, that would be ludicrous.
Break even almost, maybe.
Probably. But okay, so yeah, we are going to go take a look at the last 5 years of Commander decks and see if we can come to a conclusion to our question of whether or not we think the Commander decks are getting better or worse every year. And we're starting with Commander 2017 for two reasons, really. Blake and I have not been playing significantly longer than 2017, so it's a little difficult for us to speak to what Commander precons were like before that.
Mm-hmm.
For some context, at least, like the Ur-Dragon deck, which is in Commander 2017, was the deck that introduced me to Magic the Gathering. And since we've been in the MTG community for about, you know, 5-6 years, we can kind of see that like Commander has had a significant boom from, you know, the interest from the last 5 years. And so we've kind of, not to discredit the decks that come before that or anything, but they were coming out once a year, and there were just some, I feel like the 2017 ones are the best place to start for really getting into the cards that we see now in Commander.
Yeah, and if we started with the very first ones back in 2011, I feel like that maybe would be like a two-hour episode, and I just don't want to do a two-hour episode, to be honest.
Oh, I feel like it'd be so much longer, because we would go through 2011. They skipped 2012, I believe, and came out with the Commander Arsenal, and then starting in 2013 is when it became a regular every-year thing.
Right.
Just because they didn't expect the 2011 Commander products to be so popular. So then they were like, oh, okay, this actually has to become a thing every year. So they took a year and then just, you know, they've been putting them out ever since. And, you know, we'll also talk about the future of the Commander precons a little bit at the end of that, because we've kind of heard some news about, you know, what that's going to look like. Because it's not just once a year now, it's 15 times a year, really.
Yeah, like some Commander decks with every set. Oh, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. So, when asking ourselves whether or not we think these Commander precons are getting better or worse, I think we are kind of looking at it, in the sense of, like, what is the general function of the precon? So, this is a product that can be picked up by anyone and be used to play Commander right out of the box. That is, whether or not you have played Magic at all, or if you're a veteran player. The second thing that we need to look at is, like, reprinting fundamental cards that are necessary to play Commander. And then the third thing is introduce new cards to the Commander format that will have a lasting impact, because with most of these decks now, you get about, I think it's somewhere between 15 to 20 unique cards that are made only for that one deck. Or, you know, in the case of, like, let's say Strixhaven, there was the Study Hall land that was kind of like a common card that was between all of them. So there are a few of those general exceptions. So, like, between 15 to 20 new cards per deck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anything you want to say before we get started, Blake?
No, I think you did a pretty good job. I think that you could probably think of more criteria in which to judge these precons on, but for the sake of this episode, we're just going to stick to those three main criteria: the reprints, the new cards, and whether or not it actually functions getting new players into the format and allowing veteran players to upgrade these decks and give them new fun tools. I think those are good enough criteria for the sake of this episode.
Yeah, well said. And you could really, you know, nitpick and say, like, what really makes them better or worse, but I feel like we picked these three too, because these are the things that most people kind of talk about when they're looking at the new Commander precons, like in Command Zone's reviews or the Tolarian Community College. They kind of, you know, break the deck down and say, like, here's all the fundamental reprints, here are the new cards that we think are worth talking about, and then, you know, they play the decks on game nights, and, you know, that's really what gets people interested.
Exactly. So do you want to start breaking down Commander 2017? Because it has been a couple years. Some folks might not remember what was even in Commander 2017. It was like a tribal theme, right?
Yes, so Commander 2017 was tribal theme, and that's kind of another thing about precons every year, is they tend to have a common theme surrounding them. So 2017 was tribal. The MSRP, or suggested MSRP, of these products were $35, and between the four decks, there were 56 new cards. So that is about 15, 13, somewhere around there, new cards per deck. So the four decks that we have are Feline Ferocity, which had Arabu, Draconic Domination, the Ur-Dragon, Arcane Wizardry, Enola, and Vampiric Bloodlust with Edgar Markov. The total kind of prices for each one of these: Feline Ferocity, $135, Draconic Domination, $129, Arcane Wizardry, $160, and Vampiric Bloodlust, $33. So those are the prices of the decks when they came out in terms of reprint value. So if you include all the cards in there, not including the new prices of the new card prices, because when those initially come out, it's kind of hard to judge what those are going to be worth. So the average kind of like reprint value of these decks was about $140, which that's a pretty good chunk of change in terms of like getting your money's worth when the MSRP of these is $35.
I'll say.
Yeah. And so the most popular commanders from this set, the top five, because they were still doing the four new legendary creatures per deck, with three of them being ones that could be your commander outside of the box, and then one more new legendary creature, but it wasn't going to be in the color identity. So you have, sorry, voice crack. Edgar Markov as the number one most popular commander with 3660 decks. Kess, Dissident Mage, with 3576. The Ur-Dragon with 3175. Enola, 1585. So there's a dramatic decrease from the Ur-Dragon to Enola. And then Arabo, Roar of the Wild, with 1541 decks. So each of the face commanders made it into the top five, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I've played against all of these at least once before in person.
Mm-hmm. And then in terms of most notable 99, we have cards like Teferi's Protection, which came out. Yep, that was in the Edgar Markov deck. And that has become like a white staple. You have Path of Ancestry, then you have Curse of Opulence, and Herald's Horn as some of the most notable 99 cards that have come out of this set. Any general thoughts that you have from when we kind of were playing around with these, Blake?
So I remember when this came out, and I guess maybe it's beyond the scope of this episode, but I still find it a little bit funny, the fact that there were so many people who were like complaining about Edgar Markov being like so strong, and yet in this same product, you also have Kess, Dissident Mage, and Enola, who are two Rixis commanders that are actually CEDH viable. It's just interesting to me that people were like, oh, we don't actually like mind the quote-unquote, we don't mind the CEDH Grixis commanders, but like Edgar Markov, we can't handle this, we're mad about it, and we're salty about it. And I do remember, as well as that fact, the fact that Teferi's Protection came out, and everyone was like, oh my god, this is such a unique card, it's pretty powerful, and we can't wait for it to be reprinted as soon as possible, because it was pretty damn expensive when it first came out. I think it's still, like, don't quote me on this, but I think it's probably over, like, $40 still.
It's definitely gotten a couple more reprints, at least from Mystery Booster, which, I mean, debatable whether or not that's, like, an actual reprint because of the scarcity of that product. And then it did just come out in the Mystical Archives, and it has been included in one or two secret layers, I believe.
So, Teferi's Protection, this is an example, and there have been earlier examples in previous Commander precons, but again, we're starting in with 2017 for simplicity's sake. So, Teferi's Protection is an example of a new card that comes out, and it's very powerful and desirable, so therefore the price is very high, and it raises the price of the deck, at least for the first few months the precon first comes out. So this is a recurring pattern you'll see, where like a new card comes out, everyone wants it, the price is very high for that specific deck, and this issue, it happens almost every year. I've just kind of gotten used to it. I know it kind of comes up every once in a while, and the answer to that quote-unquote issue is just like, tell Watsy to reprint it, hope it gets reprinted, make your voice heard, and wait.
Yeah, and it's interesting also to kind of go back on your point on Edgar Markov and, you know, Kess and Enola, because like Yeah, Kes and Anala are CEDH viable, and when these decks initially came out, I feel like the distinction between CEDH and EDH wasn't
as well defined.
I guess as well defined, and so like you know, the people who were playing Kes and Anala and wanted to play to win, like they knew that was kind of what they were trying to do, but like. Edgar Markov is just strong in general for, like, casual play, which is what EDH is mostly meant to be about. So I feel like Edgar Markov kind of went under, was more on people's radars because he would just pop up, not because he would be in the CEDH pods where, like, you would see more, like, Anala or Kes decks.
Yeah, and I know, like, one small critique of Edgar Markov at the time was the fact that it's like, well, why would you really want to play any other vampire tribal deck when you could just be playing Edgar Markov and play like some of the best three colors in vampire tribal that you could. And I know that was a big thing where it's just like, why play this when you could just play Edgar Markov? So I know that was part of the discussion as well.
Yeah, we can talk more about that too in a bit, where it's, are some of these cards that are being made really giving the true impression that we need them to? Because, you know, if Edgar Markov is just now the most powerful vampire commander, like, why don't you run him?
Yeah, it's the classic, is this card expanding the format and giving you more options, or is it narrowing the field of vision and just consolidating pre-existing decks? And yeah, that's a topic point that, you know, since the dawn of time of the format.
Yeah, and we can talk about that a little bit more later. Mm-hmm. Why don't you run us through the 2018 decks, Blake?
Sure. So in Commander 2018, the general theme was that there were multicolor planeswalkers as the lead face for each of these decks. And the MSRP at the time was $40. It had about 59 new cards, similar to the past year, about the same amount. Three foils per deck, and these included Lord Windgrace, Aminatu, Estrid, and Saheeli. I remember these pretty vividly because I believe it was a previous Commander Precon that had Planeswalkers as commanders, and so this was kind of like the resurgence of that idea. It's like, hey, here's even more Planeswalkers as commanders, giving you folks more options. So I have played against all of these commanders. They can each be tuned up pretty well, maybe not to CEDH levels, but to a pretty good degree where I consistently see them at LGSs. Again, maybe like a side note, maybe outside the scope of this episode, but I'm still gonna bring it up. I remember like a small critique of the Lord Windgrace deck when it first came out was the fact that everyone's like, Lord Windgrace asks you to play like a Landfall, Lands Matter deck, but a lot of the 99 cards don't really fit that idea and are really crappy, so why would I buy this deck? And it's funny how those were the initial complaints, and then as time has gone on, people have just like forgotten about that conversation, and people have like just put in the Landfall Matters cards, and they absolutely love their Lord Windgrace decks now. So I just think back on that and think how funny it is.
Well, I think that's a really good point to bring up, though, because it's, we can kind of talk about it because, you know, if you are wanting to play Lord Windgrace, Lands Matter, Landfall, Tribal, and you open the precon and you don't see a lot of the initial cards that you think would be in there, that kind of talks about, like, you know, the design philosophy and whether or not, like, some of the cards that were reprinted or could have been reprinted into the deck weren't, and you kind of have to question, like, well, why? Because, you know, I think sometimes when we talk about reprints, you know, sure, we could reprint Risk Study into any commander deck that's blue.
Should
that's
we?
Like, should we could, but should we? And because what does that kind of like say about the gameplay? Whereas, you know, we want to reprint some of the cards that do have maybe more of a lasting impact or, you know, go along with the deck synergy better, like, for example, like Colotus Cobra or Avenger of Zendikar in the Lord Windgrace deck, though Avenger of Zendikar might have been reprinted in that deck. I'd have to check. But yeah, so like talking about like reprints, like, you know, let's put the reprints that should be in the decks, or the reprints that we would expect to see in these decks, in these decks, not like, you know, just have a bunch of like pseudo land matters cards. And I mean, there is some maybe argument there for like, you know, you want to include some but then not include a bunch, because you do want players to like learn how to deck build on their own as well. But I think you still want to give them a good starting off point. So I think that is a good example of what you brought up about how, yeah, it really wasn't the lands matter deck we were wanting, where it could have started off somewhere a little better, and then, you know, players were able to build off of that better.
So for some context, I'd like to read some of the like popular commanders and notable 99, just so the folks listening have a bit more context of what we're talking about. So our number one commander from this product was actually Yuriko, the Tiger's Shadow. It's the ninjutsu commander that as soon as she came out, everyone's like, oh my god, this is where all my ninjas tribal deck is going. And then you can do other things with her that are actually quite powerful, and everyone loves her. She has like 4,392 decks. And then in second place is Lord Windgrace with 3,254 decks. Then Aminatu the Fate Shifter with 2,411. Then Tsubasa the Sunlit with 2,386. And Verena Lich Queen, who has 1,890 decks. I remember Verena coming out and people were like, oh my god, like my zombie tribal deck can finally now include all the zombies that I want to include, because most zombies are spread out across the Esper color identity. So I remember that being a major factor.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, moving on to the notable 99. I don't think we said this in last year, but there are a number of legendary creatures that are not just commanders, but also do go in the 99. So, like, number one, you do have Lord Windgrace, you do have Aminatu, you do have Tsubasa, and, like, Zansha, and Estrid, and Bruticlad, and Saheeli, and, like, a few others. But, like, we kind of, I don't know, we kind of try not to focus on them because, I mean, maybe we should. Guy, do you want to address that? Or, like, we kind of skip over the legendary creatures or cards
that
could be.
Yeah, when we're talking about the most popular cards in the 99, we're talking about the most notable 99 cards that got designed for the decks, not the ones that ended up being in the 99. Like, some of these planeswalkers or legendary creatures that, you know, ultimately end up as 99 cards because you used a different commander. We're looking more at kind of the other 99 cards that were designed in those decks.
Specifically for the main deck.
Right. Because, yeah, we could get into the commanders, but we just felt that some of the more notable ones, like Windgrace's Judgment, Loyal Apprentice, Estrid's Invocation, Treasure Nabber, Nesting Dragon, Loyal Guardian, these were some of the more notable 99 cards that came out of this deck that probably go in a more wider variety of decks than some of the commanders that are now default 99.
Right, I know you say that, but I remember, and that you actually pointed out to me, you reminded me that one of the major critiques of this year's Commander Precons was the fact that a lot of these 99 cards weren't actually very good compared to past years.
Yeah. Let's move on to 2019, where we had the keyword theme commander decks. So it was Zaveen with Flashback, Kadena with Morph, Geared with Populate, and Anji with Madness. And there were 59 new cards for the decks that were in here. MSRP about $40. And then average value, so you have Zaveen, $69, Kadena, $60, Geared, $54, and Anji, $70. So the average price comes out to be about $63. So that's a significant decrease that we've seen from the last 2 years, where 2017 had about $140 worth of average value. 2018, $76, and then 2019, $63. So reprint value has gone down, and these numbers aren't being taken as in right now. They're being taken from the time from when these decks came out. So we watched like Tolarian Community College and the Command Zone to get the prices that were accurate for that time, not, you know,
yeah,
going and looking at them now.
I just want to say this really quickly. That's the difficult thing about stating specific prices, is the fact that their prices are constantly fluctuating, and they, like, from a day-to-day basis, but also from, like, a month-to-month and a year-to-year. So, like, so we're really hesitant to give, like, specific prices in this episode, because they may be true for the time of recording, but they may not be true to you listening at the time that you're listening. So that's why, there is some truth to it, but you also got to take it with a grain of salt and remember, like, the time in which these prices we talk about are actually listed.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess that is fair. And, you know, when we look at, like, the price, I guess we're really more looking for, did they reprint a card that was worth, that had like some value that then helped bring that price down in a meaningful way? And I think between 2017, I think there was Mirari's Confluence, which was a pretty notable reprint from that time that came down in price. 2018, I remember nothing. 2019, they were talking about how, like, Seedborn Muse was going to be one of the most notable reprinted cards, and at the time, I think it was only, like, $5, so it wasn't great.
Last I knew, Seedborn Muse was, like, $20.
Is it really that expensive?
Well, it might have gone down since the reprint.
I mean, it was a valuable card for a while, but I guess, like, now, you know, it's listed as, like, $8, but it's seen multiple reprints. Like, it's only gotten two more reprints after that, so it would probably only be sitting around like the $10 or $15 price range. I don't know. At the time, I just remember, like, it wasn't that expensive to be, I guess, a notable reprint in my mind, but whatever. Okay, most popular commanders. We have Krik, Son of Yawgmoth, with 2660 decks.
Huh.
Elsha of the Infinite, 2614, Atla Pilani, 2418, Anji, Falconrath, 2293, and then Kadena, Slinking Sorcerer, with 2118. And then some of the most notable 99 cards, again, going over, like, the cards that were designed for the 99 in these decks. The big one, Dockside Extortionist, Oron, Frost Fang, Savine's Reclamation, Bone Miser, and Apex Altasaur. And we actually do see quite a few of these legendary creatures, like Marisi, Elsha, Pramacon, Chainer, make their way into the 99 here as well. So
yeah.
some of these actually, in like last year, as in 2018, quite a few of the legendary creatures did end up making their way into the 99 for some of the decks.
Yeah, and I, again, like, I might just say this on every single year, like, this might be beyond the scope of this episode, but I remember the fact that, like, when Krik, Son of Yawgmoth, came out, everyone was like, oh my god, does this just make black the best color? Does this make, because the fact that you can pay Phyrexian mana instead of, like, actual mana, like, does this just make black OP? Like, is this just best mono black commander there ever is? And it turns out, like, it's fine. It's like, it's fine. Like, it's fine.
I mean, it's CEDH viable, but, like,
yeah,
I don't think it...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, nobody, you know, you don't see it, like, dominating, like, playgroups, really.
Nah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is the first year, at least in my mind, that I can... Well, I guess this... Teferi's... So we talked about Teferi's Protection being a notable card that kind of, like, drove up the price for Edgar Markov. But now that's a similar situation here with Dockside Extortionists driving up the price of the Savine deck, making it the most, you know, notable one to grab, because now Dockside Extortionist has only had one printing, and it's probably around... E-Trek says it's about $53, which sounds about right.
Yep. At the time of recording, this is the only time it's been printed in this Commander Precon. I don't know, Guy. I've never heard of this card. What'd you call it? Dockside Extortionist? Never heard of it.
Yeah, it's probably garbage. When it enters the battlefield, create X treasure tokens, where X is the number of artifacts and enchantments are imposed. What? No. This can't be that notable. And it's a pirate? Like, who plays pirates? Who plays goblins? Like, two of these tribes? Psh, garbage.
All the pirate tribal fans are going to come after you. They're going to kidnap you in your sleep.
I have a pirate tribal deck, so don't at me.
I forgot about that, yeah.
It's not really put together, but yeah. Besides the point. But, okay. So we have Commander 2019, and then now moving into the next year, though, before we get into that, there's the announcement in between where they were like, 2020 is going to be the year of Commander.
Oh, God. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so they were like, oh, we're going to have, you know, the mains, one of the main sets tie into the Commander decks, and we're going to bring back doing five decks, and then we will have two more precons with another standard set later that year, which was Zendikar, and then two more with the Commander Legends set that came out as well. So let's talk about Commander 2020, the quote-unquote kickoff to the year of Commander.
That was the Aquaria tie-in, right?
Yep.
Yep. All right, so it had an MSRP of about $40, had about 71 new cards, 4 foils per deck, and most notably, it had Gavi, Catherill, Garena, Kalamax, and Otremia. It's all those... A lot of these Precon commanders were tied to the main set and the main set's world, right? Like, Otremia was, like the Mutate commander. And Gavi was, like, all about cycling, which was also in the main set. And same with all these other commanders, basically.
Yeah. It gave them the opportunity to expand upon set mechanics that, you know, like they talk about how...
Yeah, like they like maybe cards they didn't want, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like the benefit was like maybe cards that they didn't want in circulation in Standard or other formats, they put them in the Commander Precon, right?
Kind of. It was like cards that, you know, help build upon the idea of things in Standard that weren't going to work so much in Standard, but could work better in the multiplayer format. So yeah, you know, you got more Mutate cards or more cycling cards that you can start out with, and then you can go to Ikoria packs and, like, you know, buy those and maybe open up a few things that you would then slot into the decks.
The average cost of each of these decks is about $81.60, and all the prices do kind of circle around that price. Alright, so the most popular commanders we have are Kalamax, Zaxara, Gavi, then Exiris, and then it kind of, to round out this quote-unquote normal commanders, we have Catherill with like 1,071 decks, and then a reminder that this Commander Precon included the partner with mechanic, so it's like a specific commander that partners with another specific commander, and that included Pocklin Halden, which were pretty popular, Braylon Shabraz, then it has like Trin and Silvar and Ukima Kazur and Nikara and Yannick. I probably butchered those names. It's actually been a while since I've heard some of these names, but But I remember people were really concerned about the fact that, oh my god, partner, oh my god, I'm freaking out. Like, I'm scared. Remember what happened last time partner got introduced? Bad things, arguably, depending on your mindset.
This was partner with Blake.
Yeah, so it's much different. Less powerful. It's much more restrictive, and everyone freaked out, and it's fine. It's fine. Yeah.
Little did they know that Commander Legends was going to throw a wrench in their plans. Yeah. What are some of the notable 99 cards?
So this Commander Precon, each deck, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but each deck had one of a certain quote-unquote commander cycle. And this was a commander cycle of cards where, like, the spell was basically free if you didn't have your commander. So I'm talking about things like Fierce Guardianship, Deflecting Swat, Deadly Rollick, Flawless Maneuver, and the green one that nobody plays or cares to remember. So, oh god, yeah, I remember the fact that Fierce Guardianship, especially above Deflecting Swat and Deadly Rollick are good, but especially Fierce Guardianship, a free counterspell, it's like, it made the price of, what was it, the Sabine? No, not the Sabine deck.
The Gavi deck.
Thank you, the Gavi deck. It just made the Gavi deck price skyrocket for the first couple of months, and of course as time passes, people get over the hype, and the prices settle, but I think this is still, like, a pretty expensive card, around $40-ish, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just another example of, like, WotC, please be careful about what new card you reprint, or even just old card, WotC, please be careful of whatever new card you print, or whatever high-demand old card that you reprint, because it might just spike the price of a specific precon, and nobody enjoys that. Nobody ever enjoys it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it always seems to work out in the end. Like, prices seem to, like, level out. People seem to get over the hype and move on to the next product. But, like, the first couple of months, it's like, good God, I want this card, but, like, I don't want to pay these absurd prices.
Right, yeah. I remember, and especially with COVID kind of being, this is around the time when, like, COVID really started to pick up initially.
Right, right.
And the demand for the card was really high, and WotC couldn't keep up because, like, you know, factories were closed, so there was a scarce amount of cards that you could get. But it seemed like later in the year, when they did start printing more of the decks, it kind of died down a little. But now that these decks are out of circulation, the card is likely to continue in price until we get a reprint, whenever that will be.
Yeah.
And I think the difficult thing, too, about these cards specifically is it's going to be hard to reprint them in anything that doesn't care about Commander. Like, you wouldn't see these in a Master set, like Double Masters or Modern Masters, like stuff like that, just because, like, it wouldn't have an impact on the limited environment. So, yeah, it's tough. So, okay, so we have Commander 2021, Commander 2020 tying in with Ikoria. We don't have a ton of data for Zendikar and Commander Legends. I remember those decks just kind of being like, hey, we're going to start throwing out $20 precons. They got three new cards per deck, and you got one foil. I remember the general reception, though, being pretty good in terms of just, like, you know, getting a lot of bulk cards that are, like, you know, relevant. Like, I think between the Obun and the Anawan deck, which were for Zendikar Rising, like, they averaged about $76 price for, like, bulk, which is pretty good. And then, like, Commander Legends, tying in with Commander Legends, that was dumb. Yeah, those kind of fell off the radar. I think Kaldheim was the ones that started to, you know, grab our attentions a little more, because those had 12 new cards per per set or per deck, because Kaldheim was the first time that we had gone there, so they really wanted to like make new cards to kind of expand upon that plane. And I remember those being generally well received, but moving forward with Strixhaven, which we just did our review of a couple weeks ago, the data here very early, we're kind of now in the present time, so it's harder to like speak to like, you know, prices and value, but we can kind of just talk about some of our initial thoughts and what we think. But so far, most popular commanders, we got Ozgear, that's like no surprise, with 1397 decks. Vayrin, Voice of Duality, 1288 decks. Aedrix and Nev, 763 decks. Rena, which that's actually shocking, 683 decks. And then Guillaume, Master Chef, 560 decks. And some of the most popular 99 cards, we got Archaeomancer's Map, Ink Shield, Monologue Tax, and then two of the commanders, Vayrin and Aedrix. Really, we don't have enough data to like kind of tell you what are going to be the most popular of these, because we're still in the middle of this. Yeah,
the data is still pretty new, and people are still adding deck lists, and so this data is much more squishy, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, it's tough. I do know that like looking at the reprint values, most of these were pretty well received, with averaging around $80, and the price tag again continued to be MSRP $40. So you're getting your money's worth. I guess you have always been getting your money's worth for the decks, because you're paying MSRP for like something that does cost more. But really, when people are like, "Oh, they're not good enough reprints," I think they just want a better bang for their buck. But, you know, still getting a decent bang for your buck. But, yeah. So, let's kind of move into asking ourselves some of these questions, Blake.
The conclusion?
Yeah. When we were talking about this, we were talking about, like, are the precons a product that can be picked up by anyone and be used to play Commander right out of the box, whether it is among other precons or other players with their pre-existing decks? So, what do you think, Blake? Do you think these precons have gotten better or worse in terms of like being able to play them outside of the box and then play with your friends?
Short answer is yes. I believe that over the last, what did it start in 2011? So it's almost been 10 years, and they've done it almost every single year since. A lot of the WotC staff have a much better understanding of what the Commander format is, the goals of the format, how to actually build Commander decks, the certain ratios of effects you typically want. And so just like through the test of time, I do think a lot of the WotC staff have learned how to build these decks better and have catered to the desires and needs of newer players and actually converting new people into the format. I do think they have been successful.
Yes, I agree with that statement. And I think also within like the last couple, I guess 2 years at this point, with them starting to introduce more decks throughout the years instead of the one-time drop is great, because it's more decks that can, you know, appeal to a wider audience. And, you know, it goes along with the different sets that come out, and then you can build upon those decks. Like, you know, Oboon came out and it was a Landfall Matters deck, really. You had Zendikar, which cared about lands. You had the Kaldheim, I forget what his name is, the Foretell Commander. That was a big part of Kaldheim, so you could get all those Foretell cards in the deck. So, yeah, I agree that over time, these have tended to improve on getting decks out there that, you know, can be played with the general public. What do you think about reprinting fundamental cards that are necessary to play Commander?
So, I'll be honest, I feel like, and this ties into our third question about new cards, I feel like WotC has been moving away from reprinting cards and much more focused on printing new cards in Commander Precons. Do you agree with that statement, or do you want to challenge me on that?
I agree with your statement a little bit, because you're right. They are making more cards every year for each deck. Like, when we started with 2017, we said, what, that there was, like, an average of 12, 13 new cards? And I think with Strixhaven, I think each of those had, like, 20 new cards. So they are increasing, which then also, like, pushes out the reprint slot of cards that could, like, fill that reprint slot, you know? So, yeah, I would say they are trying to, like, move into making more new cards for the format rather than reprinting cards that, like, players want. Because then I think, you know, that incentivizes players to then invest more money elsewhere to upgrade their decks. Mm-hmm. However, I think the one nice thing about the decks, too, every year is we do get, like, Sol Ring, Arcane Signet, Command Tower, like, some of those, like, true staples that do go into every deck.
That's true.
That will help keep those prices down for those cards specifically.
That is true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's nice. So I think this one, I'm more of a, like, they aren't doing the best job at reprinting fundamental cards for the format, just because they are trying to focus more on making new cards.
Yeah, like Archaeomancer's Map and Monologue Tax, in response to the critique of, like, white needs help in Commander. And that's just one example, but I think it's a good example.
Yes, it is a good example. And so the last question before we ask the ultimate question. So these new cards that are being created for Commander, do you think that these cards have had a lasting impact on the format, or what do you think in terms of, like, their impactability, if that's a word?
Right. I mean, I would say, like, there's usually a certain number of, like, obviously, like, each of these commanders in the precons is new, right? And there's usually some of the new commanders that rise to the cream of the crop and truly stand the test of time. Like Elsha, Paco and Halden, Calamax. Those are just a few examples of, like, how there's always going to be some commanders from these commander precons that will stand the test of time, and you'll see, even though they may be a few years old, that you see every once, like, you still see at your LGS. And in terms of, like, 99 cards, I would also agree that there's some that rise to the top and will stand the test of time. You know, it's still yet to be apparent with Archaeomancer's Map and Monologue Tax, but a better example might be, like, Fierce Guardianship and Deflecting Swat and Deadly Rollick and Savine's Reclamation or Frostfang. I could go on and on. Like, there's always some cards that do eventually rise up and will stand the test of time. So, I guess my short answer is yes. There are new cards that have lasting impact.
Now, my question, I guess, because I would challenge it a little, and I feel like I'm going to challenge it a little because...
Go for it.
With the most recent example of the Breena deck, a lot of the cards that were designed for the Breena deck, I don't think you're going to see outside of the Breena deck precon, or a deck that revolves around Breena. And that's like 15 to 20 cards that were made that year, so that's like 20% of the new cards for that, like, set, quote unquote.
Sure.
That probably won't have a lasting impact. So do you think that enough cards are being made each year to actually have a lasting impact? Because if right now we're thinking about it, like, Archaeomancer's Map, Ink Shield, and Monologue Tax, just three of the 86, 90 new cards that were made this year going to have an impact. I guess that maybe that's a little unfair to ask of
like
the cards.
I see what you're saying. Like, when there's some winners, there's going to be losers. In my subject.
Are there more winners than losers, I guess, is kind of what I'm getting down to.
I mean, technically, no, but there's enough of the few winners that when I go to my LGS, it always feels like, oh, okay, like, there's something new. Like, all right, the Archaeomancer's map is here. All right, there's the Monologue tax here. Oh, there's the Fierce Guardianship here. And so it is subjective, but in my subjective opinion, I do think so. I do think that every Commander Precon, like, introduces, like, some card that is relevant to a large number of decks to where it shakes things up a bit. But you can feel free to disagree. Argue with me in the comments.
Yeah, I mean, I could kind of argue with you here.
Right now, fight me.
Because, like, for me, it's more like, I would say yes for cards that were designed closer to, like, 2017. And as we've come closer to now, I feel a lot of the cards that are being designed are more so cards that are more niche to specific decks. Like, right. A lot of the cards, I think, from Strixhaven that got designed are made for the Strixhaven decks. And even though those, they are, you know, some pretty good cards, a lot of them, outside of, like, the two or three winners, like Archaeomancer's Map, maybe Ink Shield, Monologue Text, we're not going to see them much outside of the decks that then relate to those commanders.
Right.
So that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, like, there's certain 99 cards from, like, 2011, 2013 Precons that people probably don't remember or play much anymore. So that is fair.
Mm-hmm. So I guess in general, from what we've talked about, do you think the Precon decks are getting better or worse?
In the grand scheme of things, I think so. I think they're better made. I hope the price stays relatively affordable. Everyone's budget is different. They are introducing new cards. I'm not so much waiting with every faded breath for new reprints, but I'm kind of looking for reprints in other locations and other sets or products. But overall, I would say yes.
Okay. I mean, I will agree that I do think that they are getting better. I just don't think that they're, like, getting significantly better every year. I think they do get better, like, baby steps.
Yeah.
But we haven't seen, like, a dramatic, like, wow, they've really perfected this yet. So I think that's kind of the thing for me that I'm waiting for is, like, the next big step in the decks to, like, you know, take them to the next level, like, the next level of product.
So what, like, so okay. Let me ask you, like, what does that require? Like, a new set of Commander Precons come out, it has insanely high reprint value, it has these new cards that everybody wants, and it encourages new players to get into the format while also still being affordable somehow?
I mean, affordability, if they continue with, I think $35 to $40 is, like, a reasonable amount of price. I think people just sometimes kind of get caught up in, like, oh, well, it was $35 last year, now it's $40, and then, you know, the reprint value isn't, like, going along with that, so, like, what's the deal? I don't know. So, I guess, to answer your question about, like, you know, what's the next big step?
Yeah.
I would say it's, the next big step for me is, and I don't, and, like, I say this, but I don't know what would be the best way to do it, is kind of have more, like, beginner decks versus level 7 decks. So, like, Precons, if we look at them generally, level 7, like, that's kind of a joke, because, like, you know, everyone's deck's level 7. But what I mean more is, like, yeah, but it's more like, you know, here's your beginner commander decks, and then doing, like, kind of what they do with the standard decks that they release where it's like, okay, these were modified versions of like pro decks that you can now play with, or like the World Championship decks that they used to release with the gold border. Doing something more like that, where they base decks off of other powerful decks and like power them down like a little, but like still being something that are like strong and you could take them out of the box and then play with your play group, and it's like a faster pace. Because like if you are a new player and you bring your precon deck, like I feel like to our play group, you're gonna get fucked. Like, not to say like we're hardcore, but like I don't think like, you know, the Kadena deck, or like definitely not the Brina deck, is gonna like be able to like go toe to toe with our decks. So I expect like the next big step to be, I'm a veteran player, I don't want to play a precon that's like lower power level, keep that for the beginners. I want a deck that is higher powered that can be played with my other friends. So like, I guess that's where I see the next big step being.
Okay.
Variance in the levels of power.
All right. Well, like these commander precons are probably going to be continuing to come out every single year. We're going to have plenty of time to look back on this episode and maybe cringe a little bit. Maybe we said a few things correct in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. We can talk about a little bit about the future of commander decks, because it does seem like they are going to be printing more commander decks now, just because they know commander is the most popular format. Like, you know, we're halfway through 2021 and they've announced 4 more decks for the D&D set, 2 more decks for the first Innistrad set, and then 2 more decks for that. So we're getting, what is that, 8 more decks this year, and we've had 5-7 decks with... So 5 decks with Strixhaven, 2 with Kaldheim. So in total, that's 15 decks for the year.
Which is a lot.
Which is the most of any year that a commander deck has come out. Have come out. So, you know, I feel like maybe, like, you know, if we are doing this podcast in another 3 years, we could look back and say like, oh yeah, we were wrong, and now we have a lot more data to kind of like reanalyze what our initial thoughts were.
Now, so every commander precon is $200.
Hopefully. Okay, I mean, that would be ridiculous, because then that kind of counteracts the affordability of, like, getting people to, like, come into the game, right. But I don't know.
Yeah. Alright, so stay tuned when we talk about future Commander precons, and when we talk about Modern Horizons 2.
Yeah, and I guess, like, my last question for you, Blake, are you a fan of the idea of them printing more Commander decks with every standard set? Because, like, I've seen people say, like, oh my god, just stop, like, don't print more commander decks, 5 is enough, but what's your view?
I mean, on one hand, sure, like, maybe if you're feeling burnt out, take a break from the game if you can. Otherwise, it's like, why are you getting mad? It's just you're given more options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of where I'm at, too. I was just kind of curious, because... seems like, from what I've seen online, it's, like, very split. Like, people are either getting too burnt out, or people are like, yeah, give me more. Give me more.
Yeah.
And I think I'm more on the give me more side. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. If you want to let us know whether or not you think the precon decks are getting better or worse, you can email us at thewizardstaff101@gmail.com. Or if you want to bitch and complain about how stupid we are, and, you know, we might have said a couple of stupid things this episode, or maybe we didn't. Yeah, just send us an email, or you can reach us at thewizardstaff101 at Twitter, or on Facebook, and check out our YouTube, just The Wizard Staff. We thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have a great night. Peace.
Peace out.